Coming up, part two of the Sunday Nighter with Russillo. This has a chance to be the most depressing podcast we've done in a couple of years. What do you think, Russillo?
Let's just get this fucking over with.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where you can find part one of the podcast with me and Russillo from earlier today. We talked about the Celtics, Bucks, and a couple other things. And then we were super excited to do part two, Mavs Suns Game 7. Not as excited anymore, although it will be a fascinating pod. It's all next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we are taping this. It is 7:18 Pacific time, Sunday night. Russillo, you take the floor.
That wasn't fun for me. It wasn't a great start. Then they ran that first play for him. He got free, up fake, right elbow, in and out. And I was like, okay. And then they missed every shot. And it was weird because there was a moment there where I was like, it's only 17-point lead. Like, that felt good. I was like, it's only like 17. Okay. Maybe. No. There's no maybe. And that's one of the worst losses I've ever seen for a team with expectations. I mean, that's not hyperbole. Like, that, I can't believe they lost. And they were down 40. What was the biggest lead? 41?
I thought they were down more than 40. They had 10 points in the second half. Booker and Paul they had 10 points in the second half.
Oh, Booker and Paul.
No. The Suns scored 10 points in the second half. They had 17 in the first half, and that seemed really low. And then they topped out 10. Booker and Paul were, I think, 0 for 10 in the first half. Look, they're on a list now that you don't want to be on.
Yeah.
There's a couple lists you don't want to be on. You don't want to be on the superstar who never won the title list. Barkley talks about that all the time. I remember he came on my podcast once in like 2011. It was like, I'm on a list. I don't want to be on this list. The list that gets brought up every time the new guy enters. And then they mention all the other guys. The 2022 Suns are on whatever short list you have for most shocking, disappointing exits we've had by a really good team in the playoffs. And just if you go since the merger, 22 Suns, I think the 16 Warriors have to be on there, even though they went 73-9, blowing the 3-1 lead in the finals. 2011 Heat, 07 Mavs, 94 Sonics, 81 Lakers, defending the title by losing a best 2 out of 3 of the Rockets. And then the 77 Sixers blowing a 2-0 to the Blazers and just completely falling apart and then almost coming back, but not really. That's the company they're in. And I think anytime going forward, people mention situations like this, this will be one of the first teams they mention. And that's just how this played out.
Yeah. There's no pushback. Like, I can't do it anymore. I mean, and that's kind of like where I'm going. They're not, I can't believe that Dallas is better than them. But what was that? I mean, they
was the weirdest thing was, how little fight they had. How dead the crowd was, because I think the crowd sensed it immediately. And Dallas was playing really well offensively and had the best guy in the game. And then Phoenix looked like they had never played basketball before. This was the most efficient, best oiled machine we had all season. I thought they were a lock to make the finals unless somebody got hurt. As far as we know, nobody got hurt. They just like ran out of gas.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the Paul thing because they seem to be hinting at it. I mean, he just didn't look the same, but I can't really sit here and make it an excuse. Booker was I don't know why would Booker be terrible.
Well, they were basically just doubling him and throwing people at him every chance they got just to take him out and hope anyone else could beat them, and nobody could beat them. But Booker was also bad. Like, you think about like what Tatum did the last 2 weeks. Booker and Tatum were kind of swimming in the same pool. I know Tatum's a better player, but I voted Booker 4th for MVP. We had to hear all the monologues from all the Suns fans and all the smart basketball people were like, whoa, people are sleeping on how good Devin Booker is. This was like the perfect game for him to show us how good he was. He went the opposite way.
Uh, You know, I've always argued about Paul, and I've said he's like the ultimate winner that hasn't won. And when I watch those Pelican series, or that Pelican series, and you're like, this guy is absolutely taking these games over. You know what I mean? You felt like he was pacing himself. He's got the perfect game in there. The beginning of the Dallas series, I mean, this isn't that long ago, all right? The beginning of this series, you're like, this guy, there isn't a list of 10 people that are more important in the NBA. Like, he may not be a top 10 player anymore, but when he's right and he's taken over the game, like, it's just so obvious and it's so much fun. You and I did these segments. I think I did my own. I think I did one with you. We were like, do people realize how, like, the profile, how special this profile, this Phoenix team looks like? You know, clutch game. They had it all, man. They had it all. And you're like, wait, what?
John Schumann, our friend who works for NBA.com, he said the Suns were the 24th team in the 26 years for which we have PVP data to rank in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And they were better than that because in any close game, it seems like they could come through. And yet in this game, there's a couple moments, like it was, you know, it was like 30 to 22 or not 30 to 22. Like,
you're right though. I know exactly what you're
saying. The Mavs were up by like
10. Right. Yeah.
And it seemed like they had a chance to break it open. I kept waiting for Chris to be like, oh, I'm going to step in earlier than I usually do because this is getting a little out of hand. Let me take control of this. And he just didn't. And it was like, is he hurt? What, is he asleep? What's going on? The whole Suns team seemed asleep.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like 31-22 a couple minutes into the second quarter. You're like, okay, you know, everybody makes their run. They're going to make a run. And then the run never happens. And then you can start asking all sorts of stuff like, well, if Chris is hurt, how do you build your team knowing that, like, this is a problem? Right? It'd be back-to-back years where he couldn't hold up. And that's why I thought the sneaky him breaking his hand was good for him because it gave him a month off.
Yeah.
And they didn't lose their seed or anything like that, so they'd be fine. And then the Ayton part of it, which is weird. And, you know, whatever, Booker's still going to be great. But, yeah, it's one of those games where you're like, this sticks on you forever. This is written in pen. It's not written in pencil. And you hope it pisses you off if you're the core of Phoenix forward.
It's over. It's over.
This is it. That's it. The window's closed.
Here's why. That loss is so bad, you can't come back from it. You can't. And they have no move. The only move they have is to trade Ayton, which we'll talk about much later in the podcast. But the history of this is like, unless you have a peak guy in his prime, like the 2011 Heat, where they figured it out and they were able to come back from that because they had LeBron James, who was, you know, in year eight or year nine at that point. And they had Wade, they had Bosch, and they were able to figure it out. The Suns don't have people like that, you know. Booker isn't on the short list. He's a really good player. He's an all-star. He's a franchise guy, but he's not on that short list. And I just feel like, you know, the 81 Lakers, they had won the year before. Total hiccup. Magic was hurt half the year. Best of three. You could talk, all right, we got it, guy. And then you come back and you win the next year. The problem with Phoenix is the league is going to be really, really good next year. I mean, you could say there's 10 teams that have a chance to make the finals next year. If you're adding Denver and you're adding the Clippers and Brooklyn, assuming they're going to be some version of a good Brooklyn team on top of all the good teams we've had this year. And Phoenix is going to be one of the 10. They're not going to be, I don't know, in the West is going to be way better. And I just feel like their window was last year and this year. And we were saying that during the season. You know, they came really close to winning the title last year. And then this year, the West was set up for them. We talked in part one, neither of us even really liked this Golden State team that much. It's just a brutal loss. So that 31-22 you mentioned. So Torrey Craig scores. It's 29-22. 9:36 left in the second quarter. And at this point, I was thinking, oh, they're fine. They're going to get back into this. They're home. Here we go. Brunson hit one. Torrey Craig gets blocked. Dinwiddie hits a three. 34-22. Suns timeout. Booker comes in the game. Turnover. Dallas misses a three. Phoenix misses a three. Dallas misses a two. Dallas misses another two. It's 34-22 for 3 minutes. And then all of a sudden, Dinwiddie and Luka take over. And within a second, it's 46-25. And that when it hit 20, that's when I was like, oh, they're not going to come back. Not the way this Dallas team shoots threes. They're not going to catch up. Did you feel like they were going to catch up when they were down 20? Because I did not.
No. And I always think everybody's going to make a run. I always think it's going to, because usually that's how it works. You know, you're up 18. It's like, oh, look at this. Now we're only up 4 and they've made their run. That's usually the way the game works. But this was so humiliating. And I also think, you know, your point about them defending Booker, I think they kind of knew Paul was just a non-factor. So it's like, so now we don't have to play him the same way. They extended the pressure out, though. They're right into those guys. And then Luka is kind of in that Giannis mode of you just feel helpless. You feel helpless at times. There's nothing you can do. And Jalen's development's great. Dinwiddie coming in and hitting every shot was perfect for him.
Yeah, that was the game 7 wild card that honestly the Bucks didn't have in the first game. You get that random Dinwiddie off the bench, 25 minutes, 11 for 15, 5 threes, 30 points, and he's plus 29 when he's in the game. That's, you know, and we'll talk. I want to talk Dallas next segment because I just want to finish this Phoenix thing. I don't think Ayton's on the team next year.
Yeah, you've been on this for over a year. And
this is a wrap. I would put your money on they're trading Ayton. I don't think they will pay him. I don't think Sarver is going to go deep into luxury tax with a team that just fell on its face with what he's seen from Chris Paul. He has no history of doing it. And I think there's probably trades for him. The question for me is like with the kind of the way the West is evolving just as a conference with all of these kind of small ball, you have to switch on everything. You have to be able to play smaller lineups to survive. And these centers are just getting played off the court over and over again. Like, does Ayton even make sense in the way the West is going? Because there's a case where you could say he might not.
Well, you know, in the moment, I always kind of argue that we're terrible at this stuff because last year when they were up 2-0, we were talking about how great Ayton was and Bridges and all this stuff, right? Like, we were having these real conversations about how special, how many top 15 players they had. And all these kinds of things. And now here we are a year later going, you can't bring him back. Although I do agree with
you.
I'm
saying you can't bring him back at $30 million a year or whatever it is. I don't think that's a smart financial move if you're also going to pay these other three guys big money.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's that Sarver kind of did the opposite of what other guys would do and be like, well, look, I don't have to pay him anymore. And then if he wants to sign an offer sheet somewhere else, he can sign an offer sheet and do the 4 years and then we can just match it. I don't know if the teams that have cap space, you know, there's not that many and they don't seem like they'd be the kind of places that you'd be super fired up to go play.
Well, I think there was a lot of smoke with the Pacers and Ayton before the deadline. I do think that was being discussed. And, you know, I still think that's possibly in play for him. So I'd watch out for them. They, you know, they have Turner. There's moves you could make where you could make that a little more financially palatable.
Turner's been in trade rumors for
McCollum really? Finally got traded. I was trying to think of other terrible, terrible, terrible game 7 losses or end of the series losses. Don't forget about the Clippers against the Nuggets in the bubble. Remember that game 7 was really bad. Those last two Rockets games in 18 after Chris Paul got hurt, those weren't awesome. The just 95
turning the, turning
the
knife.
The 95 Magic when Anderson missed the free throws and they just slowly fell apart as that series went along. Those games are actually kind of fun, but to just get swept by that Rockets team is pretty bad. I was trying to think if there was a Celtics one like that. The only one I could think of was the 09 when they lost to at home to the Magic by like 20 in game 7. Remember that when KG was hurt that year, they just came out and they sucked.
Yeah.
But that team wasn't going to win the title. I think what really differentiates this is this was a team we all thought was the finals team. Like pretty convincingly, this was not just the favorite, but I think like the prohibitive favorite.
I got to know more. Like I want there to be a book done on the 48 hours leading up to this game. Like what happened?
Or the last week? What happened since game 2? What happened to this team?
Right. Like, and I think Kidd, we brought this up before this evening, we get started, we're doing the totals. And I'm like, they put together a really good staff there.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm like, okay, they got their two. You know, Phoenix goes home. They're better. And then game six was a little alarming because I was like, if you're a really good team, you know, you probably find a way. Like if you're a team that's supposed to win an NBA championship, maybe you find a way in there, but certainly coming home. And I don't get it. I mean, I know the shooting variant stuff and whatever, but there has to be like a discussion. Yeah, there has to be a discussion. Like what did you guys feel like coming out of the tunnel?
Well,
like did somebody sleep with somebody's wife here? Like, what are we talking about?
I was on a text thread wondering, by the way, please don't aggregate this, fucking psycho aggregators. This is just a conspiracy theory just to describe how weird this game was. I was thinking like, is there Sarver stuff coming out? Is that investigation coming out in a week? And they found out highlights of it and it sent the team in a tailspin? Because this team is in a tailspin. I don't understand it. They just went 64-18 and 6-2. They were 70-20 heading into game three of this series and then lost four of the next five and lost game seven, which we'll say they lost by 33. But this game, they were down 40 plus with like a minute left. It is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in the history of the league, at least since I've been a fan.
You know,
actually, want to take a break and then we'll keep going?
No. Well, yeah, I actually would like to not do any of it. But
let's take a quick break. Come back.
Make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel, so many ways to play best of all. When you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. Let's talk about a Game 1 same-game parlay. So we got a Game 1 on Tuesday night. It is Boston-Miami. Miami's favored by 1.5 because that was such a grueling series for the Celtics. I have not been able to pull off a win on any of these same game parlays in the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to say, take Miami -126, go with the over on Tyler Hero threes because he always kills the Celtics. Go with Jimmy Butler to score 20 plus points and do like 10 rebounds for Bam and you're good to go. There's your same game parlay. If you're new to FanDuel, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code BS. Once again, promo code BS. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. No sweat. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. You must be 21 plus in select states. Refund issued as non-withdrawable. Free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Connecticut, 888-789-777. In Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER. In Michigan, 800-270-7117. 1-877-770-STOP. In Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Tennessee red line is 800-889-9789. And in West Virginia, 1800-GAMBER.net.
All right, come back. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
I'm on a text thread with Big Cat Chris Long, and they were monitoring me the entire day. Like, hey, how you feeling? How you feeling? And I was like, yeah, we're ready. We're ready to go over here. And then, then they started texting while the game. They're like, man, this isn't good at all. This is bad. And I was like, all right, I don't want to text about this with anybody right now. And I was hoping
it was like Russell's notifications have been silenced.
That's right. There's a Chris Paul sign.
Undelivered. Your snaps are now undelivered.
So Long, when they're down 40, Chris goes, Booker's got to make that. just to mess with me. But he was like, you know, trying to make sure that Booker was also going to be criticized. No, it just sucks. It sucks because, like, look, I've made all these anti-Harden arguments over the years. My anti-Westbrook position is well established. I felt like I was right. And yet then there appears, if you were going to zag with me, you go, how can you have such a blind spot for the guy you love while you don't like these other guys? And at the very least, I was like, because I at least know that he is wired differently and will play in such a way that he cares, you know, like watching Harden in an elimination game, let everybody run past him.
Yeah.
Watching Westbrook at times just be oblivious to the other nine people that are out there. Like, Chris just doesn't play with them. But if you wanted to be mean to me, you can say, like, look, your guy has an awful playoff resume, and he just did it again in game seven.
I'm just going to go through it really fast for the listeners.
Okay.
2008, they're up 3-2 against the Spurs. They lose the last two, including game seven. 2012, they blow game six against Memphis. Then they win in seven, get swept the next round. 2013, up 2-0, lose the next four to Memphis. 2014, beat the Warriors in a game seven, lose an OKC to six. And that's the worst one of all of these for Chris, because he's just has some really bad moments in that series. 2015, win a game seven against the Spurs, where Chris makes the game-winning shot. Up 3-2 against Houston. That's the famous Josh Smith, Corey Brewer disaster collapse, and they lose in seven. 2016, gets hurt in the Portland series. 2017, loses game seven at home to Utah, a team that does not have a lot of great playoff moments, at least recently. 2018, gets injured during the Golden State series. They blow a 3-2 lead, losing game seven. 2019, KD's out, and they lose game five and game six to the Warriors. 2020, when he's on OKC, they lose game seven to Houston, to James Harden. He's somehow involved on the other side of James Harden, like one of his greatest playoff moments. 2021, blows a 2-0 lead in the finals. 2022, blows a 2-0 lead, loses game seven by 33 at home to Dallas. That's the Chris Paul playoff resume. Removing all the nuance. It's not awesome.
I don't have anything else to say.
I still think he's one of the best 30 players ever.
Thanks. Thanks for that.
He doesn't have... Like, I still have Isaiah. I still value Isaiah in a different way. And I know the stats, Chris Paul's stats crush Isaiah, but I just feel like this is why I loved Isaiah. We talked about this when we did the Book of Basketball pod. It's just that there were certain games. Like, I just don't think Isaiah... Oh, maybe. I don't know. Because by the near the end of the Pistons, he had some, you know, not so great playoff losses. So maybe he's a bad example. But at least in his peak, those 4 years there, Isaiah was like, you just felt like it was, you'd have to drive over his dead body to beat his team. And I don't know what I witnessed tonight. And so let's talk about Booker really fast, because I don't want to pile on Chris. And Chris, I think it's going to come out that Chris was hurt in some way. I can't explain the Booker thing. Booker, 23 in game one, they win. 30 in game two, they win. 6 for 13, 18 points in game three, they lose. 35 in game four, they lose. 28 in game five, they win. And then last two games, he's 6 for 17 in game six and 3 for 14 in game seven. 19 points, 11 points. Not awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, I at this point with Booker, like, I think it was an incredible year, right? I voted him, I had him a top five MVP. I had him first team, all NBA, right? Yeah, with Luka. Yeah. But
I had him fourth for MVP.
You know, this will turn into one of those deals where it's like, now next year, it's all kind of like applying the rules to how you're allowed to talk about these guys, right? Because next year, like, what's Phoenix going to be? This is what I don't get. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are they going to... No one's going to care about any of it, right? Paul's going to be older. He's going to get hurt again. And Booker, as good as he is, I don't know. Does this mean you reclassify him? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that to these guys every time they lose a playoff series, but...
I think some of his contemporaries have just ascended higher than him. I think is at least the one fair thing we can say, that he's a little closer to that Mitchell Towns class of 22 to 25 than he is to the Tatum and all those guys class. But I think heading into these playoffs, I felt him and Tatum, you know, you're looking at those two guys as two like the best young superstars in the league. But now after this, I don't know what to think. Next year, on the cap for $129 million next year. That does not include any money for DeAndre Ayton. Devin Booker, 33.8. Chris Paul, 28.4. Bridges is 21. Crowder's 10.1. Shamet's 9.5. Ouch. Saric is 9.2. Campaign's 6 million. I thought they made a mistake going away from Campaign, by the way.
Cam Johnson's
6. I just think Shamet as a point guard is insane. I just would never do that. I would play my third string point guard over Shamet.
Do you think the lesson of this series, they went to Holiday a little too late?
Yeah. I should have led with that. Why not? I just Shamet as a point guard. It's just nuts.
I'm not telling you it's great.
I'm not even sure he's good.
I'm not telling you it's great. But I'm just saying, like, the Campaign stuff for me drives me crazy. Because it's like, all right, Campaign time. And then he just comes in and it's...
Well, they could have used somebody with irrational confidence in today's game. I'll tell you that. I don't really know what the moves are. I guess they could package Crowder and Saric and, you know, maybe take some bigger contract back if they wanted to, but Sarver has no history of doing that.
I wonder if they would trade Paul.
You think he would go for that?
What if he was like, yeah, this isn't, you know, this is, I'm not saying he, you know, wants to do anything. I just wonder if they'd be like, hey, do you want to go somewhere else now?
All right, let's flip this around. What would be your dream scenario for Chris Paul's next destination?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, interesting.
That was where he supposedly was trying to get angled to Wog, but now it doesn't matter because they have Drew, so it's not going to happen. I would not want to see him join the Lakers in that shit show.
You don't think there's you? I can't rule this out. I don't think this will happen, but I'm just given Sarver's history, I cannot rule it out. You don't think there's a chance they would trade Chris, trade Ayton, and do a reboot? Just be like, we missed our window.
I think Sarver's boss. I think it has to be
in play with him, right?
Yeah, I think he would be willing to do anything. And this is I'm just double checking the contract here for Paul. So he goes to 28.4
and 30.8.
Right, and then that fourth year is non guaranteed. I just wonder. Look, I'm just, you know. This is as disappointing a loss as we have seen from any team in a really long time. So it's probably not the best time to start playing team building, but it is, here we are.
Yeah, but if you're going to compare this, I think a good comparison to this is the 2007 Mavs. Even though 2007 Dirk was better than anyone on this Suns team. But same kind of thing where you knew after the loss that it was going to take not just a year, like it was going to be a different looking team before they recovered from it. Like nobody left that 2007 playoffs and said, watch out for those guys next year. It was more like, whoa, what's going to happen to these guys? That's how I feel about the Suns loss. This is a what's going to happen to these guys kind of loss. I don't think it's an overreaction unless it comes out that Chris was playing with like a broken hip or some, you know, some hockey injury or he had like a, I don't know. What are even the possible injuries? It looked like he was favoring his leg a couple times, but I just don't know. He's fucking old. He's 37.
I thought it was a hand thing again.
Maybe. Who knows?
The way he stayed down in game 6, but I don't know. He didn't do a ton of publicity for the surgery last year when he had surgery. So I don't know that he's in a hurry. He's not usually in a hurry to tell you that he's hurt, but the way the announcers were kicking it around, I don't know. So would you say, hey, all right, well, Chris got hurt again. Let's just run it back. I mean, I do think that there are owners that if they had this profile of a team, they would just say, hey, let's just run it back. Like, we're probably still going to win a bunch of games and we have a chance. And who knows? Maybe the ball bounces our way this time. But
you can't run it back. I think you have to figure out the Crowder, Saric, Campaign. That's $25 million. Can you go get one more vet to put with these guys that you can trust as one of your 5 guys? Can you prove the Crowder spot? Or you go the other way and maybe you start rebooting.
I don't know who you could get to force a trade. And I don't think they'd really have, unless they wanted to do something with Ayton. But Yeah, would they try to run it back without Ayton and add a wing that they think is like a huge upgrade over what they have? I mean, we haven't even talked about Bridges once, because Bridges is also somebody who, you know, he can have 4 or 20 and you're not surprised. And it's rarely going to happen on his own. And so that's a lot of money into another wing that you're like, can you give us a little bit more scoring? And he'll have nights where he's a complete non-factor. I mean, look, we're 30 minutes into this. I forgot about him.
Luka seemed like he was not exactly shivering when Bridges was switched on to. Now I'm bummed out. You're so bummed out. Now I'm bummed out. Just had the Celtics win like 3 hours ago. Now I feel like it was, although I should be more bummed out because I lost about 17 future bets on the Suns.
What else did you have?
Oh my God. I made 2 big Celtics Suns and Bucks Suns finals bets like in March because I was convinced those were the only 3 teams that could make the finals. I had big bets for round 2, Celtics Suns, Celtics Suns Warriors. And easily could have hedged heading into game 7, but it's like, look, the one thing we haven't seen yet is the Suns taking a shit at home. Like, they might have looked shaky on the road, but at home, they've been the most, you know, pretty reliable. Wasn't ready to just go against a team that was 70-20 heading into game 3. But turns out I should have. I guess the Dallas thing, it's like they there's easily a world where they just miss almost all those threes. I guess there's a Luka piece to this that we should talk about. We haven't talked about Dallas enough. What are we, 30 minutes in?
We haven't talked about them at all.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. We'll talk about Dallas. All right. Apologies to the Mavs fans for not talking about Dallas yet. It's just like, that's how insane that Phoenix loss was. I really feel like that was a borderline historic, not even borderline. I felt like that was a historic loss. Dallas, the Luka thing. People are comparing him to the 07 LeBron, which was always the catch with, you know, if you were thinking Dallas maybe had a chance to win the finals, and the history of the truly great guys in the first couple years of their career. You think Luka's, this is, I think, year 4 for him. Usually by year 4, the truly great guys have at least a couple big playoff moments. He hadn't had it yet. He was absolutely incredible in this game. It was the kind of thing where you had to come out and be awesome right away on the road, and he did. He seemed almost arrogant in a good way. Nobody in the Suns could guard him. He was laughing. He was looking. It was actually like performance art. Like, the difference between this and like the LeBron Pistons game is like, LeBron was like, he was like a young pup in that game. It was happening. It was like, wow, I can't believe this young guy is doing this to the Pistons. And it was awesome, but he was hitting a lot of jumpers and threes, but it never felt like, oh my God, this guy is psychologically destroying everybody in this building. Luka was like, it was like watching fucking Gladiator. It was really impressive. I mean, he's had a lot of games like this, but this moment in a game 7, I was impressed.
Yeah, it kind of felt like whenever we're talking about guys like this, right? You'd be like, hey, could Luka be the best player in the NBA? When you were saying that, I think in his second year, I was like, I don't know about that. You know what I mean? But yeah. Now it's not an absurd question to ask about him. And then you put together those 2 playoff runs where they lose to the Clippers. And you look back at those numbers. Like, the first year, you're like, did you see what this guy did, right, in his second year? And then he's even better. Like, those showdowns with Kawhi a couple years ago, like, that stuff was just nuts, right? So yeah. Then you're kind of like, well, if he's really one of those dudes, it'd be a little unfair. It could be circumstantial. You know, there's not like an absolute for all this stuff. You're like, well, if he's really that guy, then how come he's not going further? And this is, it kind of feels right, though. Like, if he's in the league 4 years in, he's a top 5 guy without question. It kind of feels right that he has, like, it's not a ring, but that's what that LeBron Cavs series was like for me. It was like a half a ring because that team wasn't that good. And maybe this team is just better and I haven't figured it out. They deserve more credit, I guess I could say it that way. But this isn't like, I don't feel like this is some awesome team. And they do this to Phoenix. And now they have like a legitimate chance at like winning the whole thing. Like, can you go there?
Yeah.
You're there.
I just think it's wide open with these 4 teams. I think you can make a case for all 4 of them. we talked about how Miami has home court in the East Finals and has history of success against the Celtics. I haven't loved what I've seen from Golden State. I think they're a team between two eras in some degree. And then this Dallas team, I mean, Dinwiddie had 30 points tonight. Anybody in the league could add Dinwiddie in February. Bertans was one of like the 12 hardest contracts to trade. You know, Bullock was sitting there in free agency for anybody. Josh Green didn't even play. That was like one of their only like higher first round picks they've had the last couple of years. Kleber, the question with him is, can he play 30 minutes in a game without getting hurt? He managed to get through this whole series playing big minutes. Going down the line, it's like, it's pretty flimsy, but the Luka piece, I mean, Luka in this series, 32.6 points a game, 9.9 rebounds, 7 assists, 48.3 field goal percentage.
What do you shoot from three?
32.8.
I know.
When we talk about it, how is he going to get better? It's when the threes go from 33% to 40 is going to be pretty dangerous for everybody.
It feels like the big ones all go in, I'll tell you that. And you know what's like crazy? He didn't really do that much tonight. Like, he didn't have to do that much damage.
The first 5 minutes was what mattered with it.
Right. He gets eight points the first 2 minutes.
And you're on your heels, the crowd's nervous, the whole thing.
Yeah. And he's sitting there just letting you know it, letting you have it, laughing at you the whole time.
Well, what did they do after game two? They talk shit to him? What was the thing with Paul and Booker where, was that after the game? Like they,
it was after game five. I thought it was after game five when he started saying, everybody acts tough when you're up.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
And then they didn't lose again. So he backed it up on top of everything else. Like he's one of those guys that, you know how many players wish they were like that? Like I can.
Or try to be
talk,
like that.
I can talk all the shit, but I can completely back it up to the level that he backs it up. There's not a lot of guys like that, man.
I'm going to compliment him yet again.
He deserves it.
I was so impressed by his defense in this game today. Because the Mavs were just, I would describe them as swarming. It's really hard to swarm if one of your five guys is either out of shape or going through the motions or doing the Olay defense. The question with him was always, can you survive with him defensively? The first two games, the Suns hunted him, the whole thing. By this game, he was flying around. He was very active. And you couldn't hunt him because he was really giving a shit on both ends. It was a two-way performance, which is one of the things I loved about it. He had 35 and 10, but I thought his D was good. I don't know what the advanced stats were for when he got matched up. I thought there was a spirit to him on both ends that he doesn't always have. You know, the stakes were absolutely higher to me.
But I think the other thing that's kind of like, because at times when I don't like it, it would remind me a little of Harden-ish, you know what I mean? That ISO stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he's
everything.
He's better than Harden ever was.
But there's a flow to it with him that I think is a little different. Like, I think at Harden, at the peak of it, it felt like you were watching somebody play basketball. Like you were on the team with the guy and you were just sitting there watching it. And there are times with Luka where I'm like, is it like that? But I don't know, man. Like the way they get that ball pinging around and the system around him allows you to not really have to have like premier talent. I mean, Brunson's really good. I get a little sick of watching him fall down for fucking 2 hours. I still can't believe he got them to challenge something where he convinced himself he was hit in the face in an earlier game in the series when he wasn't. He was so convinced of it that he was like, yep, we got to challenge this one. Like, you just faked yourself out. You know what I mean? Like, when you start thinking about how many guys would you want? Who's the second player that you're picking ahead of any of the Warriors? Are you picking Brunson ahead of Clay?
Yeah.
This version of Clay?
Yes.
Well,
not even close.
Wiggins?
Want to do a draft?
Love drafts.
All right. I'll take first pick. I'll go Luka. You go Curry. Okay. So Luka and Curry up the board. So now I'm up again.
Kuminga?
I'm taking Draymond.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not positive he wants to shoot under any circumstances at this point of his career, but I think he does so many other good things. I think he has to be taken there.
I think I'm taking Brunson.
I think you have to. This is tough. I'm going to take Poole.
I'll take Clay.
Wow. Okay.
Come on.
I would have taken Finney Smith there, so I'm taking him here.
I thought about it, but I mean, he also had 5-4-2 in games this series.
Yes, he does. But sometimes he just doesn't shoot.
Right. But that's not going to happen with Clay.
But Clay will have go 6-20, which is worse.
It's hilarious.
Defensively, he's not even close anymore.
Wiggins.
You're taking Wiggins here?
It's kind of crazy that the guy who started for the West in the All-Star is still available, and I'm not sure I want to do it.
The cat. He's hopping on your
the
lap.
The cat.
Give him a pet.
I'll say Wiggins.
Okay. Even though he wasn't very good today, I'm going to take Kleber. Or very impactful today. I just think when he's out there, they're really hard to play.
Bullock?
Hmm.
Are we going to keep going?
Nah, it's kind of tails off here. Isn't there one more Warrior? Looney?
He played well game 6.
Yeah, it tails off. But the thing is, we probably won't see Looney in this series.
I don't think so.
So in one respect, the Warriors are going to be like, cool, small ball. We invented this. Then Miami would be like, no, we actually invented it in 2012. You can go back and look at the tapes. And the 2008 Celtics are like, no, we actually invented it. Go back, game 4. Spread them out. KG and 4 guards. But if they want to go small ball, I think that plays both in Draymond's hands, but what won't play in his hands is this Dallas coaching staff has been fucking awesome all year. They were awesome in this series. And guess who they're going to leave completely alone? Draymond Green. Completely alone. They're going to make him do something. Who guards Luka on the Warriors? I don't know if Wiggins is big enough.
No one is big enough.
Porter?
Bridges isn't big enough. You know, we saw what happened, and Bridges is a hell of a defensive player, too. I mean, Luka's just in that.
Celtics have some guys that could guard him.
Yeah, they do.
Porter? Could we see a little Kuminga?
Kuminga was not good against Memphis.
He wasn't. He's a year away. He's in his Kobe Utah series 1997 stage of let's wait a year on this.
It'd be great though. It'd be great if they were like, hey, can you go out there and chase Luka around for 15 minutes and spell us and not make mistakes? But
Can I tell you, Bullock was plus 44 today. 5 points. Plus minus continues to be the dumbest
They still found a way to almost get into a fight at the end. How great was that?
Holiday like pickpocketed Boban with like 7 seconds left. Boban thought he was in John Wick 4. He was going to do some martial arts on him.
Yeah,
I love
like,
that.
Hey, we're conceding this, and Holiday's like, I need to get my PER up.
I have two more Dallas things. One was the Porzingis trade. Inadvertently and surprisingly becoming one of the most impactful midseason trades we've had. We always have these trade deadlines. We do the pods, do the preview pods, then the actual trade deadlines unfolding pods and trying to, oh my God, this happened and this happened and this happened. And here's a trade that might have actually swung the title and none of us would have suspected it at the time. It was more like, wow, they're just quitting on Porzingis. This is just a quit job. They're just choosing to go sideways with another guard and Bertans, who's a corpse. And those guys come in and, say what you want about Bertans, but he, at least he was giving them 14, 15 minutes a game in this series. And then Dinwiddie, who was in a coma for 3 weeks, but then was good the last couple of games. But just in general, I mean, is there a world? If I had said to you the trade deadline, I think that trade just swung the title. You'd have been like, what?
No, never. I mean, I didn't say it at the time. At the time, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Dinwiddie, who nobody seemed to like playing with in Washington.
Right.
But he's in a perfect situation here because it's like, no, we can just, you know, go out there and do your thing and play with the backup group. And you're not really getting in anyone else's way. Like that used to be the thing. The worst version of Dinwiddie was you come in, you never pass, and you're on your own program. And I don't know if it's when the reins of a team is taken away from you, if that changed something with him, because maybe that was the hardest thing.
Or
for
maybe
him
this
Washington.
Is the perfect role for him.
Kind of
heat checky third guard off the bench guy.
So the other part of this that I guess I just didn't really figure out, because Porzingis is still talented. I think that's allowed. It's okay to say that. He's 26. I'd heard Luka wasn't exactly crying at the news that he was being traded.
Fair.
And I think when you watch Dallas with Porzingis, what I didn't realize was that just by him not being there was going to be awesome for Dallas, because he still was somebody of a contract and a stature and production that you actually did have to keep playing, right? So it always felt like this kind of appeasing two worlds here, where it's like, Luke, it's Luka's team. Everybody knows he's the better player, but we still have to pretend we're doing like normal Porzingis things here. And now you don't have to do any of those things because he's not there. And I guess I didn't understand the impact. I didn't know how to like value that until we saw it. And now that they're not pretending he's part of the team anymore, which is what I thought one of their big problems was.
Yeah, we've seen that over the years. Like, for some reason, it made me think of Bynum on his last Laker year, where the most fun was when it was Gasol and Odom and Kobe, and just they the way they moved and the speed. But then Bynum, it was like, let's bring this guy in. Bynum, low post player. But it would just kind of throw them off that last year. And then they ended up doing the trade. But sometimes teams have these guys that just, even though they're good players, they're fine. They don't seem to fit in with the whole team. And Porzingis, I think part of it was because he was the star before Luka got there. But he just never really fit in with what I think Kidd wanted to do. Kidd, Jesus. I mean, we could have Kidd and Udoka as the coaches this year, right? Kidd could have been hired by anybody the last couple of years. And Udoka, rookie coach, that would be nuts. I just have to mention this again. We know all these teams passed on Luka, but Phoenix passed on him.
Yeah, two. I mean,
three. Sacramento.
Oh, right, because of the trade.
In Atlanta.
Right.
Remember?
No, I get it. I know your point.
No.
Right.
Remember you had that thing where you're like, even though the waves are against me right now, deep down in my bones, I still think this one thing, but it's not as cool to say right now.
Yeah.
Last year when Trey was getting hot, I was like, oh, Luka for Trey. Still sure that was the worst trade?
No, I know. No, this is absolutely your soul.
And I was
95.
Like, all right, I'll take the hits, but feeling really good about my opinions on that trade. Thanks for asking though.
That was a dumb one. It was always a dumb one when it was happening. And you're right. In that moment, Trey gets through Philly. And then it's like,
how many round twos has Luka been in? It's like, all right, I still feel pretty good about my feelings.
Yeah, because then you're like, because the answer isn't the thing that's being asked, though. That's the other part about those things. Like, that's an exercise in some of these things that we'll have in the take world, where it's like, hey, we sure that trade is yeah, it was a bad trade. Luka's better.
Luka's not just better. He's one of the most important players of the century. I mean, honestly, how old is he? 20? Is he 23?
He's 23.
He's 23. Damn.
He's 23, and his the best thing about him was that because of what he did in the international play and having to play with men and being like,
yes,
there were things to be expected.
That's what I fell in love when he was playing against fucking 30-year-olds and won the MVP in the league.
Right. So this
and
isn't...
People were telling us that didn't matter for some reason. So it didn't matter. He's the MVP and his team won the title and he was 17 years old playing against fucking grown men with kids.
Yeah.
And fully developed bodies. This didn't matter. Second tier league. Okay. I watched like, I don't need to relitigate that one. let me ask you this. I think this is a Kyle turn the camera on question. What's the league's dream finals out of the four teams left? Is it Boston Golden State? I feel like they can't lose with any of the matchups. Dallas gets in, they can take the Luka thing and they can fucking shoot it around like a t-shirt gun for 2 weeks and be like, this is our new star right here. We gave you Giannis last year. Here's Luka. And if Boston makes it, like Luka, Tatum, two new stars. We don't need LeBron anymore. LeBron, Durant, that whole generation. Bye. Here's our new guys. I guess Miami.
What's the Miami storyline though?
Well, Miami Dallas would be fun because then we'd get to have our 2006 finals redux, 2011. There's an actual weird history between those two teams. So I'm in on that.
Yeah.
The Miami Golden State, I guess. I don't know. Heat culture against Warriors culture. I could talk about Steph being in the finals is a win. Luka being in the finals is a win. So already they've won either way. Phoenix coming back to the finals was probably the least exciting out of any West scenario. And then Celtics, I don't know, I guess the Miami, just because they're, you know, aesthetically not awesome sometimes. I can't say like I'll be telling my grandkids about the Miami-Philly series. Hey, you guys want to pop on game 4 of Miami-Philly? It's the one where Harden gets hot near the end.
Does anyone pop those games on?
Probably not. Not even me. But what's the dream finals? You had to guess.
I think it's Golden State, Boston.
They've had great games for 6 years, 7 years, dating back to like early Brad Stevens.
Yeah, for whatever reason, and I used to kind of think it was stupid, you know, when it was like, well, we know how to play them. Remember that was part of the Durant pitch? Like we've discovered this thing. And I'm like, all right, I don't know if I buy into that. But they do seem to, there seems to be something there. Whenever they've played, you'd have the smart thing with Steph. Well,
they have more size on the wings. They can switch on everything. They're really good, I think, on defending three-point shooting if that's the only thing they have to worry about. They're really good at forcing you to do the one thing you don't want to do, which in Golden State's case is having Draymond by himself by 6 feet at the top of the key trying to decide what to do. Who do you think is favorite to win the NBA title right now?
Boston.
It's Golden State on FanDuel. Plus 120 Golden State. Celtics are 2-1. Miami is plus 420 and Dallas is plus 650. Dallas was 33-1 in mid-April.
I got to tell you, I'm a little off of Golden State.
Me too.
Like
I'm with you.
I'm not saying they can't win it, but I'm totally open to the idea of Dallas, like just wreaking havoc, Luka going crazy and them finding a way. Like, I don't think this is a good Golden State team, but it's not even close to what those other teams were. I don't think it is.
Well, this is one of my favorite gambling scenarios where we just spent the first 30 minutes of this podcast talking about Phoenix, what the fuck just happened, one of the worst losses in playoff history, all that stuff. But it's like, what if Dallas is just really good? What if they're just really good?
I know. Yeah.
And what if we go to the next round and then they do this to Golden State and we're like, oh, Dallas is really good. I'm kind of there. I think Dallas might be really good. I don't trust the Kleber piece of it. That's the X factor to me. I just don't trust him. He only played 21 minutes today. They're able to not play him in the fourth quarter. But anytime they've had to just put miles on him, it gets a little dicey. But yeah, if you were asking me who am I picking in this series, Warriors are minus 250, Dallas is plus 200. I think it should be way closer to even, personally. If my life depended on it, I think I would pick Dallas.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like this Golden State team as a favorite.
I'm not surprised. That feels a little aggressive. And I don't know, maybe it's because, like, what is it, game 5 of Memphis? Down 50, you know, does that creep into your head a little bit? Or Is that the new normal now? Because I kind of knew, I thought exactly what was going to happen in that series. It's like, all right, game five's embarrassing, then they're going to go home. But yeah, that wasn't, you know, it wasn't like they stomped Memphis without Ja.
Close one, 5 minutes left.
Exactly. I mean, it went right down to the wire, and then they ran away from him. But I think I'm more concerned with Golden State with Luka. You know what I'm saying? Like, by the way, it's hard for everybody here, but Luka, like, you don't need the top level talent all the time around because everybody else's job's easier because of this guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm going to pick Dallas, but the fact that I'm here, where I was about Dallas after the two games in the Phoenix series to where I am now would seem like an impossibility for me to go from, like, remember they made the late run in the beginning of the series and like Reggie Miller was talking about how like that was a positive. And I was just like, somebody's going to wake up and think that this game was close and they're not close. And after game three, what they did when they came out and how they defended Paul and how intense they were. And I was like, whoa, all right. Well, you guys are just down 2-0. I can't believe that in 2 weeks I've gone from how I felt about this team then to actually contemplating picking them against Golden State, but I probably won't.
Last Sunday, I did the compare and contrast with the 18 Rockets to the 2022 Mavs and how they were kind of more similar than I was prepared for when I was thinking about them. And I think they are. I think the difference is I just trust Luka way more in a series like that than I did James Harden.
Well,
and ultimately, I just feel like Luka, when it comes down to it, he's going to come through. I just feel like he will. And I never 100% felt that way about Harden, even when he was at his peak of peaks. Always felt like it was just a lot of him going between his legs as four guys stood there and repeat. And it felt stoppable as the stakes got higher. In this game, the stakes were as high as they could be. And Luka's like, all right, I'm going to shoot three here. Now I'm going to post up this guy, foul line jumper. I'm just going to go by everybody to get a layup. Like he was toying with them. Phoenix was a top five defensive team. And whether Chris was hurt or not, it doesn't make sense that Luka would just be able to eviscerate them like that.
But I don't know how you're going to stop him. And you're right. Like the trust factor of the big moment, I'll never look at Luka and go, oh, I don't know if this guy's built for this. Like he's absolutely built for this. He was built to do one thing, and that's scare the shit out of everybody else. And I mean, this to me is like worth, it's something like this was a thing on his resume today to go into Phoenix to do this to that team. Like I know, you know, who knows if they don't get to the NBA finals, if they don't win a ring or whatever, but like I look at him differently now because of this, because of what he did today.
You and me both. Celtics Mavs plus 371 on FanDuel.
Are you betting it?
No. Only because I'm really worried about the Celts in game one. I actually think there would be a better price if they lose game one. But the game one, I think that's a really hard spot for them. I don't think people fully understand how fucking physical that Milwaukee-Boston series was. And the only reason I haven't even a somewhat advanced opinion is just having gone to two of the games and just being like, Jesus Christ. This is so... like. Al Horford, like, do people understand what it's like to take a charge from Giannis?
Oh, my God.
Do people fully understand on your TV versus, like, what it's like to be bowled over by that guy? And, like, Smart got, how many times did he just get knocked over by Giannis in that series? Like, 12? Grant Williams, like, 20? Horford, 15? And it's like you're playing football, only you don't have pads and a helmet. So I just worry about them on Tuesday. I wouldn't say I'm optimistic.
I really think Miami's lack of offense is gonna be a problem for them.
That'd be the hope, right?
Yeah.
All right, before we go, a little James Harden.
Oh, okay. That'll cheer me up.
Yeah, I figured it would. 0-for-2 in the second half. Yet another terrible playoff moment for him. And now Philly is in an absolute pickle because Daryl's one crush in his life, the crush that he just couldn't resist. And now he's in real trouble in all kinds of ways. You have the floor.
I need to know how everybody feels about these Harden numbers. is everybody on the same page? Because, like, you know, I've talked about this a little bit before, where I think teams go, hey, this contract will absolutely suck, but we're paying for the window of 2, maybe 3 years now. All right. And they do it. They do it knowingly that the back end years are going to be terrible. I also think everybody's like, ah, whatever, I'll just trade him. And be like, are you sure? Be like, yeah, the cap goes up. Who cares? Whatever. All right. I have to imagine that Daryl has some sort of reassurance from Harden, or Harden has some reassurances from the Sixers that everything was going to work out here on the contract thing. But I can't fathom what this dude is going to look like in another couple of years, because it's bad, and it got bad quick. And, you know, everything I've ever heard about him is that he doesn't really get it. He doesn't want to take care of himself. He doesn't think he needs to do these things. And he feels like he's falling off a cliff physically here. And that's not something I'd want to sign up for in a 5-year max.
There's been guys like this over the years that were really good, and then all of a sudden they just hit a different point of their career physically, endurance wise, and you could see it. You know, Iverson's the most famous example, but I think Rasheed Wallace was like that. Rasheed Wallace, when he was on the Pistons, you know, was just this unbelievable, and that was later peak Rasheed. It's an unbelievable specimen, right? All the stuff he could do. There was just nobody like with his size and all that stuff. And all of a sudden it was kind of done. You know, by 2009, I was like, oh, this is a wrap? Really? That was fast. Big Dog Robinson was like that. That guy was really good. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's bouncing around. He's on the Spurs bench. It's like, what happened to that guy? It was like almost overnight. There's different reasons for it, right? Something can happen injury-wise. People can not take care of themselves. They can go out too much, whatever the reason is. But you kind of know it when you see it. Jermaine O'Neal, when he was in that Miami getting traded to Toronto's, and people were acting like he was still the guy who averaged 24 a game. And it's like, he's not anymore. He's not that guy. I watch basketball. I have league pass. That guy's gone. And the Harden, he just seems gone. That whatever that version we think is gone, and you could say, is there a world where we see him running the steps and he's in amazing shape? I just don't think he gives a shit like that. I don't see him being like, watch this. I'm going to show everybody. I don't think it's in him.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is either. Because I think he's felt like, well, look how good I've been this entire time.
Yeah, I think he thinks he's had a great career. Hey, right, man, won a bunch of playoff series. I won an MVP. I'm one of the greatest scorers in the history of the league. I'm not going to apologize. I had a great career. Fuck off.
Yeah, that's always been my Rasheed theory. Because I thought Rasheed should have been an even better player. Like, he should have been.
Could have been as good as KG talent was.
Yeah, and I think
KG was wired completely differently than he was, and that's why they had different careers.
Right. I think Sheed was like, I got a ring, I got $100 million. Like, what? Why? You know, it's my Rasheed Wallace theory. Like, you're telling that guy he did it wrong, and he would be like, what? Why? So I think Harden probably falls into that same. And look,
Shaq's the ultimate example of that. Shaq's like the 13th best player ever, and he won 3 straight titles and has the best finals numbers 3 straight years of anyone ever. And it's hard to be like, ah, he should have been a little better. Shaq's like, no, I was really good, actually. I made $400 million. I'm one of the most popular endorsement athletes now. I'm a great fucking guy. Everyone loves me. I'm on TV. I think I did it right, actually. Thanks for your advice, though.
Right.
And then guys like us are like, ah, you could have been like 10% better if you just been a little bit more shape. So I think Harden is like that.
Yeah. But the problem is now you go, like, you moved a major resource in Simmons for Harden.
For the wrong person.
Yeah.
Well, and Curry, who Embiid loved playing with.
Yeah, and look, I'll admit, I think because of the way maybe we were talking about the Simmons trade partners with our group or whoever, I felt like, well, getting Harden, despite people telling me that the price was going down all the time on Simmons, you know, I was like, hey, that's actually great. They pulled this thing off. But of course, they had to, you know, they had to sweeten the pot a little bit more because Brooklyn's going, yeah, or the guy we're trading you actually plays. He plays bad on purpose now, but he plays and your guy doesn't play. And then you get the whole Simmons thing. So I felt like in a way, Daryl pulled something off here. Maybe I'm wrong. But then to see it play out this way, and then I loved Embiid being like, yeah, maybe James could be a little bit more aggressive. And then people were like on his case. And I go, I don't care. Like, if you're a team and your number one guy in Embiid is going to call out what's painfully obvious. You could have done an endless loop of game six of stuff with Harden where you were like, what are you doing? Why do you not care more? How can you actually be like this? And I love Embiid calling him out for it.
There's no way Harden could have survived in that Milwaukee Celtics series without physical and wasn't how hard everyone was trying. You know how much he would have stood out like a sore thumb? Everyone's flying around. Bodies are all over the place. And there's James like jogging around. I think it bums me out as somebody who cares about basketball. Because I really do think he was great. And, you know, some guys are just missing that small little thing. But, you know, he quit on two teams. That didn't sit right with either of us the whole time. That's not why I follow sports, to watch shit like that happen. And then you think like, well, at least when he goes to Philly, now he's going to be happy. Maybe he'll dig deep and find something that, you know, is sitting there. And obviously nothing's sitting there. And I can't fathom, maybe we're older now. We follow basketball for so long that we kind of, you know, that you see the same mistakes being made over and over again. And you have this reservoir of shit detector stuff there. And like, ah, that's a bad sign. I remember that when this happened in that year. So with Harden, I know it's a mistake to give that guy $250 million. I can't imagine anyone will do that. I there's no way that works out. 0% chance.
What do you think will happen then?
Paying for past performance is the worst thing you can do in sports.
Yeah.
And it happens in baseball all the time. Well, that
it
guy
used
was
to
awesome.
Happen.
It doesn't happen as much anymore.
No, but remember, like, that's what baseball was.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Now we're going to give you this huge contract right after you turn 30. Awesome. Yeah. And then basically every team was like, wait, we're just doing this wrong all the time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you're right. That's hard to think. It's like a 1997 baseball contract.
It's perfect. You'd be like, yeah, he had like 24 home runs in right field.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I think. But I don't know, man. I mean, do you think Daryl would do something crazy here?
I can't imagine. Unless they were afraid they were going to get sued and there was all kinds of tampering stuff. And they felt like we actually have to give them the deal because there's like a paper trail, like almost like a Joe Smith, Minnesota type of situation. There's not a thing like that. I can't imagine why they would do anything more than 1 year with him. Who's signing him? What team out there watched Harden and was like, ah, maybe we can get James Harden?
Maybe a team that has, you know, nothing to show for itself for however many years.
But there's only like 4 or 5 teams with cap space.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense with any of them, I wouldn't think.
Well, I'll tell you, like, as a Celtics fan, for them to hit to get those picks with Simmons and Embiid, not to mention all the other picks they had for just how it played out. If you look at the asset war chest they had, like 2016-17 range to what they have now, it's pretty crazy. And this is after hitting the maxi trade or pick. You know, that one is just a little skill drafting him, but also luck that all these, he was the 7th point guard in that draft, whatever it was. And that turned out to be like the third best pick they made of all the process picks. But pretty rough. And then what happens? Here's the other thing, if you're Philly, and you have to really worry about this. What happens if Embiid says, get me the fuck out of here? I don't play with that guy. And the Philly fans would say, well, no, he's under contract. It's like, cool. Well, we've seen that play before. Let me point you to 5 other guys who had long-term contracts who were like, get me the fuck out of here. And then guess what? So, you know, there's a team like the Knicks where he has his old agents running the Knicks. I would be worried about that if I was Philly.
Yeah, because you're signing up for, you're like, you just saw it play out. You saw Embiid's frustration. And Embiid, you know, look, I thought some of the MVP stuff the day of when he came back didn't make any sense. They're like, oh, he's devastated and win MVP. It's like, dude, he's got a broken thumb, a broken orbital bone, a concussion. He couldn't run for 6 days, throw you right back into an NBA game, playoff game. And
we have this fiber mask for you. If you get hit in the face, it won't be that bad.
It's not going to feel good.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be that bad either.
You'll cry in the court, but it'll be fun.
Yeah, you're going to cry on the court.
You're going to cry from excruciating pain, and it might actually make your eyesight worse. But try this out. Put it on.
So I don't, Embiid, although a lot of the foreign guys don't ever seem to force their way out. I don't know if that's just something that happened. Does it mean it's a thing or is it just something that's happening? So far it's been, the American guys.
Yeah, even Hakeem tried to get traded that one time for a split second and then kind of gave up on it when he was in the Rockets. Remember? It seemed like they were going to get traded. Never actually God, asked you for went the trade
way,
request.
You went way back.
Well, I've told you this before. I'll never forget. There was like a split second where it was like...
The Celtics with Hakeem?
I was driving around all-time bitter that I couldn't break into media, listen to the WEI guys talk about... I was in grad school wondering how I was going to get a job listening to these guys talk about whether you would trade Reggie Lewis for Hakeem Olajuwon. And I was like ready to like just start steering my car into traffic.
Did you call in?
I was just like, oh my God, how do these people have jobs? And it's going to be hard for me to find one where these people are having a real conversation about whether the Celtics should give up Reggie Lewis for Hakeem Olajuwon. And I loved Reggie Lewis, but what are we doing? This is Hakeem Olajuwon.
That's a tough one. Was that a weekend shift, maybe?
Yeah, man. No, it definitely wasn't.
Wasn't.
I think it was a drive time afternoon shift. That's what it was. But yeah. Anyway. All right. So we see that the same way. All right. Before we go, it is now 8:28 Pacific time. We're going to set up Saruti because the Suns game ended over an hour ago. And now there's some stuff popping up. So let's go live to the sidelines where Steve Saruti is there. Steve? How are you?
I'm great. Do you want the Chris Paul news first or the DeAndre Ayton news first?
Let's get the Chris Paul news first.
All right. Chris Paul said that he is not retiring. We'll be back next year. And then also, this is coming out, I think this is from great. Mark Spears, learned that Chris Paul left quad injury, but he declined to comment about it.
Left quad injury. Okay.
Well, that explains it.
I mean, that's only the leg he pushes off of, right, for most of his... Makes sense. Okay.
Pat Beverly also getting involved too, by the way, talking some smack. Doesn't want to hear about the injury situation.
Oh, really? You mean Pat Beverly who shoved Chris Paul and got traded immediately after he smoked the Clippers last year?
Why do we have to hear from Pat Beverly when he's not in the playoffs? All right. What else? What's the DeAndre Ayton thing?
This might be juicier. So this coming out after the game, he did not talk to the media. And then Coach Monty Williams was asked after the game why he only played 17 minutes and zero in the fourth quarter. And Monty, in a very angry, stern tone, said, quote, it's internal. And then Devin Booker, after the game, also asked about his contract situation, said, I care about him as a brother. I just want to make sure his mental situation is right. Whatever happens, happens.
Mm.
Doesn't sound great.
So it turns out when you don't sign the guy to the contract extension, you let it play out. And then there's a reason for that person to possibly crater in a big game and that contract stuff pops back up. That's maybe why you take care of it before the season.
Yeah, that would be another side of the argument to it. Not having the worst game 7 ever.
I didn't realize he only played 17 minutes. I don't really remember that many of the 17 minutes. I mean, everybody was so bad in that game. It was hard to even pinpoint one, but on top of it, that was the guy they drafted over Luka, which is pretty brutal as well.
Yeah. I think there was a little of that with Luka tonight too. Looking around, going, you guys took this guy number one.
Luka, it would be funny if after the press conference, he's like, I'd love to do this to Sacramento, but I don't know if I'm ever going to see them in the playoffs. So it's going to have to be a game in December.
And we know Atlanta's not getting into the finals.
Yeah, definitely not. Wow. Phoenix dissension. And the Sarver story hasn't even come out yet. The final investigation.
What's going on with that thing?
It took the whole season. Who knows? Who knows? Even I don't know anything about that one. Usually I hear a little. That thing's been buttoned up.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if there will be an oral history written about the lead up to this game 7. Like somebody's maybe. Pet died.
Narrative pod.
Narrative pod?
Why do you do it?
Is it too early to do it?
Narrative pod is just Tuesday on the Ryan Russillo podcast. Oral history. I'm going to interview Big Cat, Chris Long, and DeAndre Ayton's brother, Frank.
That would be amazing to just be able to pull it off, title it 2 days after they have the worst game. Say, wouldn't even be two full 2 days. It wouldn't even be 48 hours. Just be like, all right, here's what I'm hearing. It wouldn't be very good.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, they're not funny, but Dallas could lose to Golden State next round. But Phoenix, no matter what happens, they're on the short list, as we discussed at the top. People will always mention the 2022 Suns when they talk about playoff teams that shit the bed at the worst possible time. They will be mentioned. I don't know if they'll be first, second, third, fourth, fifth, but they will be one of the first teams mentioned. The same way the 07 Mavs, who then were able to shake it off a little bit because they won the finals in 2011. So it felt like that, I don't know, kind of softened it. But this one, I just don't see. I think they missed their window. That was it. We're going to look at this. It was like last year, this year, and that was it. That was their window.
I mean, to say with zero exaggeration, you can just say, we witnessed today one of the worst losses in NBA history.
Yeah. Yes. There you go. All right, Ryan Russillo, you can hear him. Your podcast usually goes up Tuesday morning, lunchtime, East Coast time range. And we'll be back here next Sunday. Probably a one-parter. There's only one game. But I will see you next Sunday. Sorry about Chris Paul.
Thank you for your concern.
Podcast produced as always by Kyle Creighton. Steve Cerruti was our reporter on the ground. Dylan Berkey as well. I will see you on this feed on Tuesday. Don't forget, huge rewatchables coming on Monday night. Not telling you the movie, but it's a very famous one. See you then.